We're at the Daviess County Museum in downtown Washington. There is a studio audience for this year's Basketball Memories, the Roundtable. This year, the 1960s. We had a great time last year talking about the 1950s, and now we're going to move up a decade. I'm Dave Crooks from WAMW Radio. We're glad to have you tuned in on this Saturday afternoon. Our special Roundtable discussion is brought to you by Helena in Montgomery, also by the Legends in Washington, by Donaldson Insurance, by American Legion Post 121, by the Knights of Columbus, by Alan Bubalo at Edward Jones, and by F.C. Tucker MG Realtors, the Norris Group. We'll turn things over now to our referee, Doug Doherty.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you, Memories 107.9, for broadcasting this event once again. We're real excited this year to have an all-star panel, and so we'll just get right into it. The 1960s, I think, can be remembered for three big things that stick out to me. The one is the Hatchets dominated the 60s, and you can go ahead and applaud, Hatchet fans. Of the 10 sectionals played in the 60s, Washington won six. That school to the east, Lagodi, won three. And then there was a newcomer, Otwell, won one. So it was a great decade for the Hatchets. The other second thing that stands out is the Hatchet House. The new Hatchet House was opened in 1967. So these folks up here coached and played in the old gym until 67, and then you had the opening of the new Hatchet House. And then the third thing, and probably one that impacted basketball the most, was consolidation. Really impacted the county. And we started the decade with eight teams from Daviess County that played in the Washington sectional. And by 1969, that had been reduced down to four teams, which we still have today. The other thing, consolidation, it did it to the entire state. You had 710 schools that were in the 1959 IHSAA sectional. 10 years later, by 1969, that number had went down to 468 schools. So it not only impacted Daviess County, it was the entire state due to funding. So these guys will talk a little bit about that. It impacted a lot of them as well. And with that, I want to introduce our panel, and we'll start in alphabetical order. So, Mr. Alford, being with an A, you're going to go first. A multi-sport star, Sam led the Hatchets to the sectional title in 1960 before embarking on a legendary career as a high school and college coach. Some of us younger folks, not that I'm young, but also know that he's the father of Steve Alford, who was on that 87 IU championship team and is currently the coach at UCLA. So welcome, Sam Alford, to our panel. Steve Brothers was from Washington Catholic from 1969 to 71, but he also was at, my understanding is, almost every home game during the 60s. Every game. So he saw all those Washington Catholic players through the 60s. He later coached the Washington girls team for 14 seasons, won 10 Big 8 titles, and earned a trip to the single class Final Four in 1995. So welcome, Steve. Steve Fisher grew up across the street from my grandparents, but besides that, Steve played for Plainville and North Daviess from 1965 to 1969. He started as a sophomore and junior at Plainville, then went on to North Daviess, led them to 18 wins in their inaugural season, later became a school administrator and a well-regarded high school sports official, and Steve will be given the Circle Center Officials Award at the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame later this month. So welcome, Steve. Galen Graber was a starter on the Bar Eve team. He played for Montgomery his first 2 years, and then The consolidation occurred. His last 2 years, he played for Bar Eve. So Galen then later went on to serve on the Bar Eve school board for 32 years. And his senior team, they were the sectional runner-up to the Washington Hatchets, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that team. Thank you, Galen, for being here. Larry Buddy Graham. Do you go by Larry or Buddy?
Depends what state I'm in. Here I'm Buddy.
Okay. In Indiana, he goes by Buddy. So we're going to call him Buddy. Buddy went to he was an old Bulldog from 1958 to 1960. He graduated as Olden's all-time leading scorer. He anchored that 59 team that was a semi-state finalist. And he went on to successful high school and college coaching career across the Midwest, amassing 806 victories as a coach. He is in the Illinois Hall of Fame, the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, the Missouri Basketball Hall of Fame, and the St. Louis Athletic Hall of Fame. Welcome, Buddy. Gary Greider, Washington Hatchets from 1960 to 1963. Gary averaged 21 points a game for the 63 Hatchets. And we'll talk about that great season and that defeat of a junior G-led Lagodi Lions. He went on to a standout college career with elite Houston teams from the mid-60s, which included future NBA stars Don Chaney and Elvin Hayes. Welcome, Gary. John Helm played for the Washington Hatchets from 1962 to 65. He was an all-conference performer in two sports. He started for two Hatchet sectional winning teams in 63 as a sophomore and in 65 as a senior. He graduated as the Washington Hatchets all-time leading scorer at the time in 1965. Thank you for being here, John, and welcome. So the 60 sectional started out with the Alfordsville Yellow Jackets, Montgomery Vikings, the Epsom Salts, Illinois Owls, Odin Bulldogs, Plainville Midgets, Washington Hatchets, Washington Catholic Cardinals, and then we had Shoals, Lagodi St. John's, and then at other times through the 60s we had Petersburg and Otwell. It is worth noting that in 68, the Odin Bulldogs and the Elnor Owls actually transferred to the, Steve, what was it, Switch City? The Switch City sectional for a year. And then in 69, as we said, by that time in 69, we were down to Bar Eve, North Davies, Washington, and Washington Catholic, which we have today. So as you can see, it was a decade of change here in Davis County. So what I'd like to ask the group, and get started so you can listen to them instead of me, is the old Hatchet House. What was it like to play in that old Hatchet House at sectional time? And what do you recall about the old Hatchet House? Anybody have any thoughts or comments about that gym? Any recollections? John Helm?
The seats were non-reserve seats, so it was first come, first serve. The schools were allotted X number of tickets. Getting a ticket was an extremely rare occurrence for people. And so if you was fortunate enough to have a ticket, then you were one of the lucky few that was going to get in and witness a little bit of Hoosier hysteria. Now, they would open the gates or the doors, and people would line up, as you guys all know, in the snow, in the freezing rain, for 3 hours before the doors were opened. And they would squeeze and push people against the door. And when they opened those doors, look out. People did not walk in. They run. And so playing in that house to the packed house with all the excitement, the electricity, and the atmosphere, as kids would do well, they would absolutely seemingly raise or lift the roof off of that old hatchet house. So they were sitting in the aisles. Farm Marshal wasn't looking. And they packed that thing in pretty darn good.
What was the seating capacity of the old hatchet house? Anybody recall? Sam? Sam
Alford. 42, I think, was the capacity.
4,200 was the capacity of the old hatchet house. And that's still in existence today, by the way. It's being used as a junior high and an auxiliary gym. What about the sectional draws and the sectional tickets? My understanding is, you know, today they sell single session passes. I don't think they did that back then because generally they sold the season tickets or the whole sectional ticket. You bought the whole thing, and generally they were sold out and there wasn't any left to be able to sell single session tickets. Is that a true story? Anybody recall?
I think that's right. I know a lot of times after your team got beat, fans from the other schools would come over and into your section and want to buy tickets because they had friends that didn't get in.
Thank you, Sam Alford. Steve Brothers.
Well, I'd like to give a little perspective from a fan's point of view because I didn't get to play in the old hatchet house. But what John said is really accurate. There's a little alley between the old hatchet house and I guess what then was the high school, which is now the current junior high school. Pretty limited area, and if you were a little tyke surrounded by a bunch of adults, you were about going to get crushed in that crowd as you were waiting to get inside. And you're also right about that stampede, but what I remember a lot is when you walked into the door, the smell of the popcorn was great. Hatchet House always had great popcorn, you know. And, you know, high school students and junior high students today can't imagine fitting 4,200 people in there because it's been remodeled. But as you all may recall, there were chair back seats underneath the balcony. I think those were season ticket holders for the regular season. And then in front of them were the bleachers for the five or six rows for all 13 pep blocks. You know, each school probably had like 15 feet of a pep block, except for the hatchets, of course. yeah, two sections. And then there was a stage on one end. That would have been the east end. A stage there where now there are locker rooms and restrooms. But there were bleachers on the stage for overflow. And it was possible to get 4,200 people in there, but boy, you needed a shoehorn to fit in there. But it was just a great atmosphere, and not like today. When your team lost, most of the time, you stuck around to watch the other schools play because you knew the players. And there would be pep block battles like hey, midgets, say, midgets, the Bulldogs are backing you. And that went back and forth between games, and it was always a big deal to see who was supporting whom. And I'd like to go on the record, nobody ever supported the hatchets. Because it was kind of funny when John and the hatchets would run out onto the court in pregame. It was like, why did you guys even show up? We're going to win this thing, which they did. But it was a lot of confidence and swagger that you had, and well-deserved, but it was very intimidating.
What about as an opposing player? I think, Buddy Graham, you're probably the only opposing player here that had a chance to play in the old hatchet house. What was that like? And Norm Beasley said last year you could hear the foot stomping in the locker room while the team was in the locker room.
Well, that's if Norm said it, you know it's correct. So, you know, I'm just a young kid and, you know, trying to find my way. But I remember one story. I was in the locker room, and it's really close, and they would always bring us over during school, and we had a practice. That was a big deal for us. And John Combs, I wrote something on his locker, like, we're going to kick your butt or something like that. And he came in and caught me, and he said, erase that. And I said, okay, okay. And I had to guard him later, and he scored 30 points against me, but that's another story. But it is, you know, for me and Odin, it was intimidating to play in the Hatchet House.
We'll take a break, and we'll come back with our next segment featuring Sam Alford and Buddy Graham. This is the Daviess County Museum Basketball Memories, the Roundtable, the 1960s. Stay tuned to WAMW.
The Knights of Columbus invite you to join them each Friday night for their awesome fish special during Lent. The KFC will offer a delicious fish buffet every Friday night from 5 to 8 p.m. and a Lenten lunch special too. Don't forget great juicy steaks Friday and Saturday night and steak specials for dinner every Saturday. Prime rib is offered the first Saturday of each month. And save the date for the return of the big treasure hunt. Saturday, April 21st, the jackpot starts at over $765,000 with 21 numbers left. The Knights of Columbus, always open to the public for lunch and dinner in downtown Washington. Financial investments are very important, but so are the investments of time, patience, and encouragement our young athletes receive from their coaches, teachers, and mentors. Alan Bubalo, your Edward Jones financial advisor in Washington, understands this. That's why Alan Bubalo is a proud sponsor of Washington Hatchet Sports on WAMW. For all your investment needs, call 254-1340 or stop by the office at 310 Southeast 21st Street in Washington. Edward Jones, making sense of investing, member SIPC.
Live the worry-free life you deserve in the safety and comfort of the gated Legends Village Assisted Living Community. Picture yourself sitting on your front porch overlooking the beautiful fountain courtyard while sharing memories with your new friends. Spacious apartments, 24-hour trained staff, movie theater, beauty shop, along with fine menu-style dining. If you or your spouse was a veteran during wartime action, the United States Veterans Administration has a reward for you. VA funds will help you live at the Legends, 812-254-9500.
Helena in Montgomery is growing and proud to invest in Montgomery and Daviess County. Coming in March, the newest state-of-the-art dry blending facility in the region will be opening across from the county garage on County Road 100 North, west of Montgomery. This facility is nestled on 10 acres and will include a new anhydrous ammonia plant right in time for spring planting. This is phase one of a multi-phase growing plan for Helena in Montgomery. Helena, investing in the future here at home in Daviess County. The American Legion in downtown Washington is proud to give back to our local community. This year, the Legion has made several donations and is a big supporter of the city's community concert series and the basketball roundtable gathering Saturday, March 3rd at the Daviess County Museum. Stop by the club and find out how you can join. The American Legion Stars and Stripes Progressive Jackpot continues to grow, and the drawing is held each Thursday at 7 p.m. Tickets are $1, and you don't have to be a member to play. The American Legion, corner of Main and Highway 57, downtown Washington.
Welcome back to the Daviess County Museum in downtown Washington. I'm Dave Crooks on Memories 107.9, and we're worldwide at WAMW, AMFM.com. This is the Basketball Memories Roundtable, the 1960s, and we'll turn things back over to our referee, Doug Doherty.
Thanks, Dave. So let's get into the actual sectional championships through the 60s. 1960, the Stu Chestnut-coached Washington Hatchets defeated the Odin Bulldogs in the championship game, 57-42. Sam Alford scored 22 points in that game, avenging a 59 sectional loss to the Odin Bulldogs. From 59, Odin defeated the Hatchets 59-56. So, with that, we're going to introduce Sam and let Sam speak a little bit about his career. Sam, a few questions. My understanding is in the regional, you went on to be the regional finalist. You beat sixth-ranked Jasper in the regional and lost to Carlisle 35-33 in the final game. Comments about revenge against Buddy Graham over here in Odin, and then your regional experience that year.
Well, you have to remember, in the 60s, we didn't have elaborate scouting reports. Today, we have all kinds of film we have to watch. We have all kind of walkthroughs we have to go through. Our scouting report was 59-56 on the chalkboard. That was our scouting report for the 60, for the 60 sectional. I don't know. Do you have the scoring there for the 60 sectional?
I don't.
I think, and I coached for 40 years, and I don't think I ever had this happen, but I think we had three players with a double-double. I had 22 points and 11 rebounds. I think Brayton Simmons had double-figure points and 10 rebounds, and Bob Fox had double-figure points and 10 rebounds. And Buddy did not get that kind of help. So from our standpoint, we went into the game thinking, you know, if we can keep Buddy from having a big game, we knew we couldn't stop him, but if we could just hold him down from having a big game, we thought we could get the job done. And, you know, we went into the 59-60 season with four players that we knew, Bob Miles, Brayton Simmons, Bob Fox, myself, but we needed a fifth man. And today you've been reading about all these players getting $100,000 here and $50,000 there. We had heard that there was a franchise player at Plainville and that we could get him if we could come up with $10. So Dance moved in. That was our fifth man for that year. And going into the sectional, he had his job was Buddy, and Brayton's job was Meeks, and my job was Schwartzentruber. And we said if we can hold those three, just contain them a little bit, make the other two beat us. And it was a good game. Final score wasn't really indicative of the game because it was a good basketball game.
Tell me a little bit about Brayton Simmons. My understanding, and Brayton's passed on, but for those of you who don't know, and I just learned this myself, Brayton is the first African-American to play college basketball at Vincennes University. And hell of an athlete, played men's softball well into his 50s. Tell me a little bit about Brayton Simmons, Sam.
Well, Brayton and I were very good friends all through school. We buddied everywhere. You pretty well summed it up. Brayton was an outstanding athlete. He went to the state finals in track his senior year in the long jump, and he asked me if I would go a long ride with him to the state track meet, and I told him I would. And he had his Washington track uniform in his satchel, and when we got there, he had to go register, and he said, "Will you keep my satchel?" And I said, "Sure." And I kept his satchel for a couple minutes anyway. And when he came back, I'd moved. I didn't know where the satchel was. And he's probably the only track athlete that year that participated in someone else's uniform because he didn't have a hatchet uniform on. But Brayton was an outstanding athlete and a good person. We had a lot of good times together. And I'm not saying Brayton was cheap. I'm not saying that. But when we moved to Iowa, at the University of Iowa, we had an 800 number. I'd get a call from Brayton just about every day because he'd call on that 800 number. But we stayed in touch all the way to the end. He died much too early. But in the 60s, he was an outstanding athlete.
So Sam, you went on to a great college career at Franklin College, led the nation in free throw shooting. 1 year at 91%. So that must be where those offer boys get their free throw shooting. Must start it with Sam. You then went on to coach high school ball, Monroe City, South Knox, Martinsville, Newcastle, and then went on with Steve to help him at Southwest Missouri State and Iowa. Tell me about your coaching career. I think you won 468 games. Does that sound correct?
I'll buy it. Well, I was fortunate. I think any good coach would say this. I was fortunate to have some good players. I had, at one time, probably my claim to fame, as far as I'm concerned, as a coach, when Coach Knight, before he got fired and before I left in 95, he and I were the only two coaches in Indiana that had players that we had coached that went on to win a Big Ten championship, an Olympic gold medal, an NCAA championship, and an NBA championship. And you don't do that without good players. So I was very fortunate as a coach that I had good players, and that makes your job a lot easier. One thing I wanted to say before we lose out here, the 60s, Dave Ulmer's sitting back there, and I know we were recruiting the Zeller boys very hard. They came from Iowa. I'm sure you knew that. But we were recruiting very hard at the University of Iowa, and then they come in with the news we're moving to Indiana. And they have to be at the top of the pack. But if you look at the 60s, in 60, Larry and I are now in the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, which we honor ourselves and we honor our teammates and everyone else with it. We're very proud of it. And we had good high school and college careers. And you go 3 years later and you have a young man, Junior G, that goes to the Miami of Florida and plays alongside Rick Barry and plays for Bruce Hale, and Gary Grider, who goes to the University of Houston and plays for Guy Lewis with Elvin Hayes. And then you go up another couple years and you've got John Helm and Jerry Flake, who John goes to Georgia Southern and Jerry goes to Southwestern Louisiana State, and they have outstanding careers. And then you go up another couple years and you have Scott Alford, who has an outstanding high school career and goes to Oklahoma State and plays for Hank Iba. And then you go up another couple years and you've got Wichman, who goes to Syracuse and plays at Syracuse. So I think that we'll give in to the Zellers. But outside that, I think the 60s was an era when we could be very, very proud of the Washington sectional, because I think they did good.
Yeah, that's very impressive. And speaking of that, Sam, tell me, you know, Steve, your brother Scott, who was a great player on that 67 Sweet 16 team, and then Steve and Sean, your boys, you coached both of them at Newcastle. But it all started here in Washington. Do your kids and grandkids realize what Washington is and what it means? Do you care to comment about that?
Yeah, it means steamer hamburgers and Mason Coney's. I'll tell one story, which is a good story. Craig Neal, who played here, Craig was Steve's assistant at New Mexico. They are going to Columbus, Ohio on a recruiting trip. They're in a private jet, and they're over somewhere, I guess, Illinois or wherever. But Steve asked the pilots, "Do you like Coney's?" The pilots say, "Yeah." He said, "Can you call a number for us?" And they said, "Yeah." So they call Fran Neal, Craig's mother, and said, "Will you go to Mason's, get some Coney's, bring them out the airport?" They set the private plane down. Fran walked out the plane. They took the sack, and up they went. So that's the way we grew up. But Washington has always been special to us. Steve became good friends with Craig when they were in junior high, and Stan was coaching here, and Stan and I were friends. So every time we'd come home to see Grandma and Grandpa, Craig and Steve would go. They'd get into trouble somewhere. So it was a good time growing up in Indiana, and here in Washington they know all about Washington, Indiana. They know what the hatchets are.
That's great. One last question before we go to Mr. Graham over here, Sam. I understand Steve got a good signing this week, Shaquille O'Neal's son, decommitted from Arizona and is going to UCLA. Give us a real quick update on that UCLA team.
Well, they're on the bubble. They got a big game tonight. He is very shorthanded. He had three players that they started selling sunglasses this year, and they're not playing. So it left him very shorthanded. But he's got the number two recruiting class coming in behind Duke, and it should be good. And I forgot, what was the score of the sectional in 60?
60?
Yeah.
In 60, it was
57-42. Okay, I just had forgotten, and I didn't want Buddy to forget.
And with that, Mr. Graham, the challenge has been made. So let's just back up a year. Sam doesn't want to talk about the 50. Buddy Graham graduated in 1960. Let me tell you what Buddy's first comment to me was when I asked him to be on his panel. He didn't feel he was deserving to be on it. That's how modest a man he is. He said, "You know, I only played a few parts of the '60s. I played, you know, I graduated in May of 1960, and then I graduated and I was gone." And he said, "You really should probably get somebody more deserving." And I immediately said, no, we want you. It's not just about knowing all about the 60s. It's about playing in the 60s and then where you went after that. And we're gonna talk about that, buddy. 59 and 60. 59, let's just, Norm went through that in detail, but I definitely want to highlight that since Sam put the challenge out. Tell me about the 59 semi-state run real quickly.
Well, I forgot the score. I guess Sam would know that score. But
59, Odin 59, Washington 56.
Oh, okay. But wow, what a great, you know, Washington. The reason why everybody was against them, you know, the other schools, they were so cocky and they'd win all the time, and they were intimidating. And of course, you know, we had Beasley, and he's kind of the same way. So we came in, and we'd had a really good team, and you know, we thought we could win. And, you know, it was a great thing. I mean, I told you earlier, we got out of school to go practice. I mean, that's great. And I'm just wondering, you know, it's life and death, and I'm wondering, is it the same way now like it was back in the 60s? But I know that, you know, the game, I mean, we just kind of stayed close, and then Norm started making jump shots, and you know, we came on and we survived and actually beat the Hatchets.
Buddy, my understanding is you actually are from Scotland, Indiana. Norm says you came out of a cave in Scotland, Indiana. I love that story, so I had to tell it again. But this, you ended up going to Odin. And my understanding is you had the choice of going to Bloomfield or Odin. So for those people who don't think recruiting didn't happen back in the 60s, Sam Alford's already spoke about Roger Chickadance ending up in Washington. And then on to my left, we've got Buddy Graham ending up at Odin. So, Buddy, tell me about that, Scotland or Bloomfield or Odin.
Well, Scotland being the big city, you know, like we had maybe 50 people living in town, but our school closed down, and so we had the chance to go to Bloomfield or to Odin, and my stepdad was an Odin graduate, so I just went to Odin, and then later on when, you know, when I got better in basketball, I had a lot of pressure about transferring to Bloomfield. So, you know, we had to walk out to the county line and every day, and I would hitchhike home from practice sometimes. But, you know, when you're in a small town, everybody knows who you are, and they're going to stop and pick you up. So that really wasn't a problem. But, yeah, there was recruiting back in those days.
Tell me about some other players on that Odin team in 60. Buddy Meek, I know, comes to mind. And then my second question would be, why Illinois? Why did you end up in Illinois as a coach? 806 victories as a high school and college coach from Scotland and Odin, Indiana. How the heck did you end up over there?
Well, let me talk about the players at Odin first. But in 1960, after our great season in 59,
when you beat Washington,
who we beat? We Washington, yeah. So Larry Souter, his dad got a job at Epson, I believe. And of course, Larry went to Epson. He was a key member, or would have been a key member of that team. But we had Buddy Meek. Buddy Meek was really underrated as a player, and he scored a lot of points that season. A tremendous shooter and tremendous player. So that's the type of players we had. We had Richard Kaiser, who who got a lot of rebounds. And so, you know, that's we won 17 games, and it wasn't easy.
And again, why Illinois? Why didn't you win 806 games over here in Indiana?
Well, you know, I'm looking for a job, and go to Indiana State. They had a great placement service, and I'm married. Go for a job interview. They offer my wife and I a job, and so that's how we got to Illinois. And then as a coach, you're always looking for a better situation. And so I looked around, and I moved from Mount Auburn, Illinois, to St. Elmo, Illinois, right on the interstate. And then from St. Elmo, I hit pay dirt when I got the Madison job in Metro St. Louis.
Two state championships, by understanding, correct?
Two state champions, correct.
So what's the difference between Illinois high school ball and Indiana high school ball? Do you have any noticeable differences?
The Indiana, the fans are there. I think there's a difference in the fans. The fans are just all over it, and the women are so much more knowledgeable in Indiana than they are in Illinois about basketball. And you know the radio station carries over to Illinois as well. That's right. But anyway, it's, I mean, both in small towns in Illinois, it's just like Indiana. I mean, everybody's behind them, and they share the ball, and it's the most important thing in town. So there's really not a whole lot of difference.
And just to reiterate Buddy's career, he's in four Hall of Fames, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, and St. Louis. I understand you just were inducted into the St. Louis Hall of Fame. I don't know if anybody can beat that on this panel, but that's four Hall of Fames. Sam, you may be pretty close. I don't know how many you're in, but tell me a little bit about that.
Well, right place, right time, and the Indiana thing, when you got Hugh Schaefer and Jerry Osmond and Norm Beasley and people behind you, I mean, that doesn't hurt you any. So I got in there, and then in Illinois, we'd had a lot of success. And then Missouri, I don't know how I got into Missouri Hall of Fame, you know, but I did, and this last one, the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame, was just a few weeks ago, and that's a big honor, and I'm proud of it.
Well, we're proud it started here too, buddy. So I'll close with this on before we go to commercial break. I found an article, North South Indiana All-Star Game, 1960. And guess who the MVP of the North-South Indiana All-Star Game was? It was Buddy Graham. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Dave.
Well, thank you very much. We'll take a quick break. We're live at the Daviess County Museum. This is the Basketball Memories Roundtable. The 1960s back after these messages with Gary Greider and John Helm. It's coming up on WAMW.
This is Tim with the Norse Group. Think about selling your home and wondering what it's worth? Requesting a free comparative market analysis from the Norse Group is the first step. This knowledge, along with the guidance of a highly qualified FC Tucker MB Realtor, will equip you with everything you need to decide if the right time to sell is now. So what are you waiting for? Talk to the Norse Group at 812-254-7939 or stop by our office at 412 East Flora Street in Washington. FC Tucker, an Indiana company for the past 100 years, serving its neighbors with good old Hoosier values.
I'm John Newton from the Donaldson Agency in Washington. You do your best to protect your loved ones, and while you keep a fresh battery in your smoke detector and have a reliable home security system, there is a whole different type of protection you may be missing. A life insurance policy from the Auto Owners Insurance Company is a way to safeguard your loved ones and in the future. See us today at the Donaldson Agency in Washington for a secure policy to protect their tomorrows. Call 812-254-4668.
Helena in Montgomery is growing and proud to invest in Montgomery and Davies County. Coming in March, the newest state-of-the-art dry blending facility in the region will be opening across from the county garage on County Road 100 North, west of Montgomery. This facility is nestled on 10 acres and will include a new anhydrous ammonia plant right in time for spring planting. This is phase one of a multi-phase growing plan for Helena in Montgomery. Helena, investing in the future here at home in Davies County. Questions about your retirement deserve more than just a call center. Let Alan Bubalo, your local Edward Jones financial advisor, show you the difference personal attention can make when it comes to your goals. Contact Alan Bubalo today at 812-254-1340. That's 812-254-1340. Personal attention. That's how Edward Jones makes sense of investing. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
We're back at the Davies County Museum in downtown Washington. I'm Dave Crooks on Memories 107.9 WAMW-FM and worldwide at WAMWAMFM.com. This is the Basketball Memories Roundtable put on by the Davies County Museum, and we're featuring stars of the 1960s. Our show continues. Here's our referee, Doug Doherty.
Thanks, Dave. And now we move on to the 1961 sectional championship. That was won by the Ligoti Lions, 72-46 over the Washington Hatchets. 62. It was once again that Butcher coach team beating the Hatchets, 62-54 over Steve Craney's Washington Hatchets. I think that was Steve Craney's first year as coach of the Hatchets. And then 63 came, and Gary Grider was a senior that year, John Helms sophomore, starting as a sophomore, I might add, upset Ligoti Lions in 63 in that championship game, 58-51, before going on to lose to Ireland in the regional final, 39-37. There's a lot of stories in those comments I just made. So with that, Gary, tell me about how good did it feel to finally beat that Junior G-led Ligoti Lions team who had won the previous two sectionals, and then in your senior year come back and defeat that team.
That was sweet. That was sweet. Beat Junior G and Ligoti. You know, beat Butcher. Butcher, he hated the Hatchets, as you all know. It was fun. That was fun times. We really had... my junior year, we had an outstanding team. I thought they were outstanding. You know, had tall boys, guys that could make baskets. You know, we had a good season. So we were thinking much further than a sectional. You know, we were thinking regional.
In 62.
That was in 62. That was my junior year. And we'd gotten, my sophomore year, you know, back then they didn't bring sophomores up much. If you look at the statistics, most of the players were junior and seniors. And so that year, Coach Chestnut, you know, he brought me up during the season. And so that was kind of a unique experience, being able to play with the older boys. And we did okay that year. We did okay, but not like later. But we got beaten, you know. So.
And the 63 team that won the sectional, 58-51. Junior G, who's also in the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame, I might add. There's a story about you and Junior G, and I'd like you to tell that story if you don't care.
Well, it's you know, could be a long story. I'll try to shorten
it up.
That's okay.
That's okay.
It was fun times back then. I think you're referring to the letter that my mother wrote, which at that time we just you know, it was just something that happened, and we. Junior was such a good player. And my mother was such a basketball fan, probably the biggest basketball fan in Washington, Indiana. She was, she loved. She always had the season tickets up in the little area that you talked about, and that was a good era. They beat us, and at that time I didn't know my mother had written that letter. And she wrote a letter to Junior G. And to shorten the story, she congratulated him on the game, being the fine lady that she was, wished him success on his future, and it went on. It was great.
Now, understand, audience, Junior didn't open this letter until 50 years later. So Gary's telling the story 50 years after it happened. That's the same time Gary and Junior found out about this.
That's correct, and that was really a gratifying time. And he stepped up and he said when he read the letter he cried, and when he told me about it I cried.
Yeah,
because it was great.
Because you know Jack Butcher raised the Lagoli Lions to hate the Washington Hatchets, so understand that. And so Junior G, probably didn't look at Gary Grider as a friend at that time, just because he wasn't supposed to be a friend. He was an opponent. And then you went to the University of Houston, and Junior went to University of Miami. And my understanding is that Miami showed up in Houston for a college basketball game, and you guys were warming up, and you couldn't even get Junior to look at you, and you thought, well, I guess he still hates me. Is that a true story?
Yeah, he was ingrained by Butcher pretty strong. And, he didn't like me at all. I couldn't even talk to him. And so that kind of hurt my feelings a little bit. You know, we played against each other. But we played down there in Miami. We actually played him three times. My sophomore year, my junior year, they came back, and then we played him again my senior year. That was Rick Barry. That was Rick Barry's year. And a quick little story about that. I was sitting on the bench in my sophomore year, and they had the benches. We played in a junior college game at a gym, and the benches were beneath the baskets. And the very first shot that Rick Barry took, he came around to the head of the circle, shot a jump shot. It hit the back of the rim, went up above the backboard, and went right in the hole for the first 2 points that he scored. And I looked at the fellow next to me, and I said, we're in big trouble. We really had a defensive plan. A fellow by the name of Denny Newman, which Buddy may know, came from Illinois, 6'5", very good defensive player. Our strategy was put him on Rick Barry, and we'll shut him down. Rick Barry had 52 points that night.
Let me back up to I want to talk about your Houston career a little bit too, but let me back up to those 61, 62, 63 Hatchets. Tell me about some of the other players you played with on those teams. Think of people like Jim Warner, Ron Hawkins, Bob Davis, and this Helm guy across the table here.
Well, my sophomore year, well, actually, my junior year, I think you're referring to, were some really, really good players. Ron Hawkins, like I had mentioned earlier, that was a team that I thought we were going to further on in the playoffs. We had Charlie Harmon. You know, Charlie Harmon was our only black player at that time. And Charlie was just smooth and just a super guy. And he played that year. Ed Carroll was a big guy. Doug Garst, we just had a real balanced team, and we won a lot of games that year. And we went into the sectional thinking that we were the best. And look, Butcher, that dirty old Butcher, he got us again.
And I'm not trying to get everybody to tear up, but, here's another thing about Gary Grider. A lot of people don't know this, but after that 63 sectional title, he took a piece of that championship net and put it on Charlie Harmon's grave. And that's the kind of man Gary Grider is.
Yeah, that was pretty. That was an emotional time. That put a damper on our team. You know, I played with Charlie since grade school. You know, we went to the same West End down here, and then all the way through. And he was just a super guy, very unassuming guy.
But died way too young.
Player.
You then went on to Houston. The Guy Lewis, who's in the College Basketball Hall of Fame, you played with a couple guys who went on to the NBA, Don Chaney, Elvin Hayes,
right.
The Big E, who was voted one of the 50 greatest NBA players of all time. You were on that team. You started on that Final Four team. Gary Grider's also the very first Washington Hatchet to ever play in an NCAA Final Four. So talk about that career at the University of Houston and that Final Four trip against UCLA.
Oh, boy. that was some trip. You know, being playing in the Final Four was just, you know, outstanding. We had the second-best team there. Back then, UCLA, we played them the first game, and they were just, you know, they were just too good. We couldn't compete with them.
Was Al Cinder on that team?
Yeah. Al Cinder, Lucius Allen,
now
Mike Warren.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So, you scored? Did you score on him, Gary?
Oh, I didn't score much. You know, we had good guys on the team. I was a guy that dribbled the ball down the court and throw it into the good guys. You know, so we had a good team.
And you were telling me that one of the best accomplishments or highlights of your life was at the University of Houston. You started dating a Houston cheerleader who now happens to still be your wife of how many years?
53. Be 53 this 53 year.
53 years. So, you know, Gary Grider had a heck of a career. He ended up in Texas, still lives in Texas.
Fort
Worth area, but it all started here, and you're still remembered here, and we honored you agreed to attend. Thanks, Gary.
You're welcome.
With that, John Helm, we're going to move on to John. You played from 62 to 65, I believe.
63
to 65.
Right.
The 64 sectional final was Lagodi 71, Shoals 64. And then 65, John's senior year, Washington beat Lagodi 59 to 48, Steve Craney over Jack Butcher. And that was a very good season. My understanding is your record, I think you were, what, 25-2?
I'm not sure. Quite honestly, it was a really good team, ranked probably second in the state at one time. It's a little bit indicative of what makes Indiana basketball, the single class system, so exciting, the Hoosier hysteria in respect to who gets upset and who advances, and oftentimes it's not always the best team that advances to the state tournament. And so certainly in my senior year, beating Lagodi was no big upset. Losing in the regional to Bloomfield certainly was a big surprise to everyone and a big upset, as was Gary Grider and I beating the Lagodi Lions. It was ranked number two in the nation or in the state at the time during the 63 sectional. It was quite an upset, and allude ever so briefly to that. This, everybody, as they say, gets 15 minutes of fame, and that was certainly something that Gary and I both can hang our hat on in regards to an accomplishment. Along that line, a couple of things that stand out to me was, number one, agreeing with Gary, Junior G was an outstanding player. And quite honestly, if he played on my team, certainly as I advanced into becoming a junior or senior, I could have easily probably averaged 50 points a game, because that's how good of a passer he was. In all of my days of playing or watching and observing collegiate ball or high school ball, I have never seen a better passer than Junior G. Maybe he was a good scorer, but maybe an average shooter, but an outstanding passer. Along that same line, Gary Greider was easily one of our Indiana All-Stars that didn't get the nomination because the team did not advance perhaps to the state tournament. So, this is Indiana basketball with David and the Goliath trying to knock off the favorite teams, and oftentimes it's the case, has been alluded to, where Carlisle beat our Hatchet team, we lost to the Ireland Spuds, we lost to Bloomfield, and so on. So, exciting times. I was asked by somebody on this committee that just tell a story, John, and you know, they know John's got stories, so I'll tell one ever so briefly and quickly in regards to the coaching that some of you other guys had so much success with. I felt like I was going to be an outstanding or had an opportunity to be a really good high school coach. It was something I was very interested in, and I had an extremely good mentor in Steve Craney. He was outstanding with fundamentals, how to build it, how to instruct it, and so forth. And so I thought I was destined to be a really good coach, and I coached ever such a brief period of time. One time winning Coach of the Year honors down in Georgia. But with that success comes a fair amount of failure. So athletics is very humbling, and about the time you think you're pretty good, there's going to be somebody bigger, faster, and a little bit better than you. And my experience as a coach was short-lived, probably because I wasn't good enough in all aspects. Maybe X and O's and instruction was good, but endearing myself to the fans and the parents and the community perhaps wasn't one of my strong suits, as was Buddy Graham. He was good at it, and obviously Sam was, Dave Omer was, Gene Miller is, and so on, and you have to accept the fact that you're not probably real good. Well, I had moved about 5 years out of playing. I'd moved back to Washington as my mother was having open-heart surgery, which was very risky at the time. My wife, being a nurse, a very good one, decided to come back and help nurse her to health. So here I was in Washington trying to scratch out a living for my family. And one of my jobs that I held down was program director for the YMCA. It was a part-time job. I think David Baker was maybe the YMCA director at the time. So I had lots of programs, but one of my programs that stands out was an adult basketball league. It had two divisions in it. One of them was a church league, where guys that just wanted to get some exercise and play on a team could come together and play on Sunday afternoons, and there was six or eight teams in that. Then there was a professional or semi-pro team that was comprised of recent college graduates like myself and a lot of really high-profile basketball players from just graduated from high school. We had about six or seven teams throughout southern Indiana that would get money from a sponsor for uniforms and for travel, and they would come up to the Hatchet House, and they would play on Sundays. And it was a Donnybrook. It was a very high-profile, wonderful, well-orchestrated professional games that would be played. Well, about three-quarters of the way through that particular season, I had two players that played against me and that I was really impressed with. And one of them was about a 5'9", or short kid, about 6 foot. He was a guard, and he was faster than grease lightning. He'd go around you. He could shoot the lights out. He could pass the ball, and he had enough smarts to back it out and set up the offense if there wasn't a fast break. The other kid was a spindly kid, about 6'7", 6'8". Outstanding shooter, had soft hands, good rebounder, and if I tried to guard him, he'd shoot over me. And if I tried to get close to him, he'd go around me. So I was really impressed with him. So out of the goodness of my heart, I called my alma mater, which was Georgia Southern, and I talked to the new coach that I did not know, and I told him that I was back in Indiana and that I played for Southern for 3 years as a starter and tried to develop a little credibility with this new guy. Told him that I was running a semi-pro program up here, and there was a couple of kids that had not used up their college eligibility, and they weren't committed, and they were definitely good enough to play at that level of basketball. And so I went on to explain how fast this kid, the young one, the small one was, and what a great guard he was, and how he could run the entire offense and shoot the ball. And the other kid was a 6'7", or maybe 6'8". And, you know, he had all sorts of skills and good hands, good rebounder, and so forth. And so I'm about halfway through explaining that to him, and he paused a little bit. And I have to add that while I was at Southern, they have an awesome baseball program with professional scouts in the stands every game, and they play the highest level of baseball. And during that time, they had a tryout of a pitcher that while I was there, and they tried him out an afternoon, and they decided that he wasn't good enough and that he was going to have to leave, and they sent him packing to Auburn, and that was Bruce Sutter, the outstanding Hall of Famer. However, so I back to the guy, and I tried to convince him of my credibility and how outstanding these two players were, and he says, well, I want you to know that I am deeply appreciative of you calling me. I am very respectful. I think we're okay. We've got some recruits in mind, and I think we'll pass if you don't mind this time, and thank you so much for calling. And I said, okay, I've done my job trying to keep my old alma mater alive with some good basketball players. And so the one player that was the short kid that was like, you know, he was fast and he was good, I will tell you, was Mark Smith from the Washington Catholic High School. He was awesome. And as Paul Harvey would say, and now you know the rest of the I forgot to tell you, the other kid, the spindly kid, that was Larry Bird. And now you know the rest of the story.
Sam, or John, great story there. And a couple of the guys you played with on your 65 team, real quick comments. Jerry Flake, I know Jack Traylor, I think you played with Alan Hopewell, Randy Garst. You had some great players.
We had some good players, just like Gary said, his junior year, they had an awesome team. I mean, it was a state championship caliber team, and our team equally had some really good players. Jerry Flake, other than being 6'7" or so and weighing 130 pounds, he was a scorer. I mean, he was just a scorer, and he had a wonderful soft touch, about like Gary Grider. And the other kids, Jerry and I would honestly would be double teamed, or sometimes worse than that. So somebody would be left open, and these kids were capable enough to stick it in the basket. So it made for a good balance.
And before we go to break, our halftime break, John, you also were able to watch your son, John, play ball, and your daughter, Julie, who played for Steve Brothers over here, who we'll be talking to in the second half. What did that mean to you to have a daughter? Julie was on that 95 team that went to the single-class Final Four in the girls.
Well, Julie was a really good athlete, but probably outworked everybody else and was very, very accomplished. And with Steve's help and my scolding her and correcting her every minute, excelled and it was really, really made me as a parent really, really proud of some of her accomplishments or the team's accomplishment. And Steve will tell you that not only did she average in a phenomenal amount of points per game, but every person on that team averaged in double figures. So it wasn't like a one-man show. It was very well balanced. And I'll tell you this publicly, forever grateful for Steve Brothers allowing me to be a part of it where he didn't have to do that. It was very gracious of him. And it's very difficult when you have a son or a daughter playing on the team, because that person genuinely has to be a heck of a lot better than everybody else. Otherwise, you're subject to an awful lot of undue criticisms.
Thank you, John. And now I turn it over to Dave Crooks.
Okay, this is our halftime intermission break. During the break on the air, we're going to talk to Dave Ulmer and Bill Walton. And coming up after the break in segment 4, we're going to talk about school consolidation, the 1967 year when the Hatchet House opened, and then Galen Graber remembers and Steve Fisher remembers. It's coming up with our roundtable discussion from the Daviess County Museum on Memories 107.9. Stay tuned.
Live the worry-free life you deserve in the safety and comfort of the gated Legends Village Assisted Living Community. Picture yourself sitting on your front porch overlooking the beautiful fountain courtyard while sharing memories with your new friends. Spacious apartments, 24-hour trained staff, movie theater, beauty shop, along with fine menu-style dining. If you or your spouse was a veteran during wartime action, the United States Veterans Administration has a reward for you. VA funds will help you live at the Legends, 812-254-9500.
The American Legion in downtown Washington is proud to give back to our local community. This year, the Legion has made several donations and is a big supporter of the city's community concert series and the basketball roundtable gathering Saturday, March 3rd at the Daviess County Museum. Stop by the club and find out how you can join. The American Legion Stars and Stripes Progressive Jackpot continues to grow, and the drawing is held each Thursday at 7 p.m. Tickets are $1, and you don't have to be a member to play. The American Legion, corner of Main and Highway 57, downtown Washington. The Knights of Columbus invite you to join them each Friday night for their awesome fish special during Lent. The KFC will offer a delicious fish buffet every Friday night from 5 to 8 p.m. and a Lenten lunch special too. Don't forget great juicy steaks Friday and Saturday night and steak specials for dinner every Saturday. Prime rib is offered the first Saturday of each month. And save the date for the return of the big treasure hunt. Saturday, April 21st, the jackpot starts at over $765,000 with 21 numbers left. The Knights of Columbus, always open to the public for lunch and dinner in downtown Washington.
This is Tim with the Norse Group. Thinking about selling your home and wondering what it's worth? Requesting a free comparative market analysis from the Norse Group is the first step. This knowledge, along with the guidance of a highly qualified FC Tucker MG Realtor, will equip you with everything you need to decide if the right time to sell is now. So what are you waiting for? Talk to the Norse Group at 812-254-7939 or stop by our office at 412 East Flora Street in Washington. F.C. Tucker, an Indiana company for the past 100 years, serving its neighbors with good old Hoosier values.
We're back at the Daviess County Museum on this Saturday afternoon on Memories 107.9 WAMWFM. This is our special annual basketball production of the Memories Roundtable, the 1960s. I want to thank our sponsors for making it all possible. They include F.C. Tucker, MG Realtors, the Norris Group, Alan Bubalo at Edward Jones, the Knights of Columbus, the American Legion Post 121, Donaldson Insurance, the Legends in Washington, and Helena in Montgomery. During the intermission, we wanted to give our roundtable guest a chance to get some refreshments and take a quick break, and then we'll resume with the segment four coming up in just a few minutes. But we're pleased to have some 1960 stars with us right now. If I can get them to quit visiting with each other, we're going to talk some basketball. Dave Omer is the basketball coach at Washington, but he also had a career that expanded 44 years. And Bill Walton played at Washington. We'll start with Dave Omer. Dave, of course, I have great memories of your coaching at the Hatchet House because you had the privilege of coaching the first Zeller, Luke Zeller. Even though that wasn't the 1960s, it was such a significant event in this town. I want you just to quickly take a moment to go back to that year, 2005. We're in downtown Indianapolis. We're playing the Plymouth Pilgrims, and we've got to have a bucket to win this thing. Tell us about that timeout and what took place.
Well, as the years go by, it probably changes. it was a situation where when they scored and went up 1 point, and we just actually gave them a basket, and, you know, we thought the game was probably over, really. But anyway, while I was trying to get more time put on the clock, we went in the huddle, and our assistant coaches talked to them and everything, tried to calm them down. And so we didn't get much done, actually. So we went back out on the floor, and luckily, I was out of timeouts, and luckily the Plymouth coach called a timeout and gave us time to organize and get a little idea of what we wanted to do. So we were talking about different things and, you know, options that maybe we'd go to different kids and stuff like that. And we set up this play, this old Christian Leitner play, where you throw the ball to half court, he turns, takes a shot. So I was telling a couple other kids that you need to run a cut here and over here just in case we can't get the ball to Luke. Luke said, don't worry about it. I'll make it. So just get me the ball, and I'll make it. I guarantee it. Okay, here we go, Luke. So,
and the rest is history.
So, anyway, he ran that cut from the bottom of the block all the way to half court. Justin Smith made a perfect pass. He turned and made a dribble, perfect shot. And, you know, people, a lot of people say, well, it's luck. Well, he could shoot shots from that distance regularly, really. And I told him that he had plenty of time to square up, take a dribble. He didn't have to throw a Hail Mary on there. So he caught the ball, took a dribble, faced up, bottom of the net.
I won't forget it, and I know if you go to YouTube right now, if you search for the shot, Luke Zeller, I know it's over 140,000 views the last time I checked it, but they actually took the IHSAA's TV broadcast and they synced it with my audio with Bob Arthur, and boy, the excitement when that shot went in, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, I saw it yesterday on YouTube, I guess. I was scrolling through something and it came up again. So, but yeah, it was an exciting time, you know. It's been so many years since Washington had won a state, even a sectional, you know, and we felt great when we won the sectional because it had been so many years. And actually, truthfully, that was really the hardest part because, you know, trying to get through that with Vincennes and so forth. But, and then we got momentum and played really well in a regional and then got to semi-state, you know, things went pretty good there. But so just getting there was great. And, you know, everything else is history.
I know we took a lot of time right there to talk about something that was not quite the 60s, but give me your brief thoughts about your 44-year career, coaching in the 60s. What was that like compared to maybe coaching later on in the end of your career?
Yeah, I coached 40 years and started in 1962, actually in Kentucky 1 year. And then I went to New Harmony and then moved on up the ladder. But it was a lot different because, first of all, as some of the guys have alluded to here today, you know, you were close-knit. You knew the families. You buddied with the kids. Everything was just great, really. And New Harmony, a small school I was at, you know, probably my fondest memories go back to there because I was a young buck, just married, no kids, and I could still, you know, sympathize with some of the things that went on. But yeah, as things changed and the rules changed and bench procedure changed, you know, it became quite different. But basketball was still basketball, and you know, even as of right now, and you know, but it's still not the same as it was back in one class. I'll never give in to that, even though I was involved in a championship. I just never did like it, never will.
So you still prefer single class?
Absolutely.
Okay. Bill Walton is here. Bill, you played at Washington in what years?
1967 and 66.
And again, your team actually had a pretty good year that year, right, in your senior year?
I want to tell Coach, good players make good coaches.
Exactly right.
We learned a lot from the teams that two previous years before us, John's team and Jack Traylor's and Hopewell's team. They had size. They had everything. They only lost one game each year. And then so when we started playing, we didn't have but one returning letterman. And what we did is we just, as the year progressed, we became familiar with our roles, and we were just five guards is all we were. 6 foot was the tallest player we had, and we just outran everybody down the floor.
But you were in the Hatchet House, right?
I played the last game in the old Hatchet gym and the first game in the Hatchet House.
What was the difference between walking into the old Hatchet House versus the new Hatchet House?
Yeah, it was like being... probably like being at a funeral. I mean, it was just raucous, the old Hatchet. People would stomp their feet on the bleachers, and you would think the building was coming down. And then all the other schools, you know, of course, they were always against the Hatchets. So, but we never, when we played, we had already won sectionals before. So we didn't think, we thought we had the right to. That was our gym. So we thought we had the right to win.
I got one more story I want to go. Talking about championships, when Luke was a senior and he was McDonald's All-American, we went to the McDonald's All-Star game, and I got to meet John Wooden. And we were down in the lobby, and we were talking, and he said, Coach, he said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll trade you one of my NCAA tournament titles for that championship. He'd never won a state championship in high school.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, so that was quite an honor to get to meet him.
Dave Ulmer, Bill Walton, talking about some basketball memories on today's special roundtable. This is a great event today, isn't it?
Oh, it's wonderful. You guys have done a wonderful job. Wonderful.
All right, guys, thanks again. Have a good Saturday. All right, our special broadcast continues from the Daviess County Museum. This is the Basketball Memories Roundtable, the 1960s. Halftime is over. We're going to get back to our program. But first, I want to thank our sponsors, Helena in Montgomery, the Legends in Washington, Donaldson Insurance, the American Legion Post 121, the Knights of Columbus in Washington, Alan Bubalo at Edward Jones, and F.C. Tucker M.G. Realtors, the Norris Group. If we can get everybody's attention, we're going to start the program up again. And here's our referee, Doug Doherty.
Okay, and now we're going into the second half, just like a ball game. So two things I missed in the first section that I'm going to go back to. The Junior G story with Gary Grider, we didn't finish that one. We ran out of time. So I'm going to let Gary tell the rest of that story. But 50 years after that letter was open, and remember, they weren't, I guess they didn't consider each other friends at the time, but Gary, tell the rest of the story.
And that microphone. Okay, good. That's perfect. Actually, use that one.
Okay. Well, yeah, it was very gratifying. We had Dave Small, who was a star down at Ireland. He, has become a good friend and so knowledgeable about basketball and everything. He put together a little thing. We played baseball, and we played on the American Legion team down in that area. And Junior G played on that team also. But he put together a little get-together of that team, baseball team, at the American Legion place down in Jasper. And Junior G came there, and that's when he announced that, and brought up and announced that letter and read that letter. And it was a very unemotional time. And, he apologized. Now we were just really good friends. You know, we see him a lot, and he's just a good guy. Good guy.
And the other thing I didn't want to bypass was Buddy Graham, after he left Odin, went to Vince Inge University before transferred to Texas Wesleyan. But there's somebody he played with at Vince Inge University that we talked about earlier, and that was Brayton Simmons, who went to Vince Inge University. So they were opponents, and then they were teammates at VU. And Buddy, I want you to touch on that.
Well, Brayton Simmons, as a lot of you know, is quite a guy. I mean, he's unbelievable. When he was we're both seniors, and I actually beat him in the 100-yard dash. It may be hard to believe. He couldn't believe it. And I would, so we're actually roommates at Vincent's. Of course, Brayton went home every weekend. But I let him know about that all the time, and I'm sure he appreciated it. But I just wanted to say that Brayton was a great guy and easily the most popular guy on the team and outstanding athlete. My mother used to watch softball, and I played softball, and she loved Brayton Simmons. And we all know he was a great basketball player, but boy, was he a great softball player.
Yeah, that he was. So, segment four, let's start out with the mid-60s. One thing that really happened in the state of Indiana was school consolidation started to happen. Due to state funding, we touched on how many schools there were in Daviess County. It played in the tournament in the early 60s, and by 69 we were down to four. After the 65 sectional, which we just discussed, Montgomery and Alfordsville consolidated into Bar Eve. And then after the at the beginning of the 68-69 season, Elnora, Odin, and Plainville consolidated into North Davies. And a lot of controversy back then, and we'll have to kind of maybe watch what we say, because there's still people that, you know, wish it would have went this way or wish it would have went that way. But I do want to touch on or have Galen Graber and Steve Fisher, since they were both parts of the Bar Eve consolidation at first, and then Steve was part of the North Davis consolidation. You guys have any stories about what went on prior to consolidation, up to consolidation, and after consolidation? What did that do to the local towns and your schools? Steve Fisher?
Well, I think the North Davis consolidation happened several years before we built the school and became an actual school. And I can remember when I was about 15 talking to my father, and he said, "Steve, this consolidation thing won't work." And I said, "Well, Dad, why?" And he said, "Well, got too many Odin people in it, like Norm Beasley." He said, "Now, if it's just Plainville and Elnora, and we could build a building out here on 358 and 57, we'd be a lot better shape." Well, in all of Dad's wisdom, he was wrong on that. I think once we finally got the three elementary schools closed and they built a new elementary, I think things are a lot better now. I think the fact that we had 18 wins our senior year and the first year there. And, you know, we had 82 kids in my graduating class, and I had 16 at Plainville in my junior class. And there wasn't a better place in the world to grow up than Plainville, but we had 16 kids and 12 girls and 4 guys, and I still couldn't get a date. And we...
They say you still can't.
I can't. And we had... You know, I had 4 Amish kids in my class, and they were just, I mean, I'm still very, very close to all of them today. But I don't remember a lot of turmoil when the school was built. We all came together. We did a lot of things our junior year, Plainville. Well,
I think the turmoil was more the parents, not necessarily the kids.
No, I think you're right. It was absolutely the parents. And then, you know, if we'd have been 2-18, I'm not sure how great it would have been. But I think the basketball team was able to bring everybody together, and everybody rallied behind the fact that, you know, we were pretty good. We lost one game that we shouldn't have lost, and that was to a team over in Knox County. And North Knox had beat us, deservingly so, but that other team down there south of Vincennes, they beat us. And I didn't play that game, Sam, so that's the reason that you probably snuck in on that victory.
Was Sam Alford coaching that team?
Yeah, he was a coach of that team. He beat me in 67 at Plainville when he was at Monroe City. I shouldn't say beat. Thrashed probably would have been a better word. He was really good. 67 team was really good at Monroe City. But I don't remember a lot. I'm assuming Bar Eve was probably the same way, because I don't remember hearing a lot of things, Galen, about turmoil. You were –
Galen, what
you played for both teams?
Of course, I know you were young then, but you were Montgomery Viking your freshman sophomore year, and then a Bar Eve Viking junior senior year. What are your remembrances?
Right, I know they heard we'd hear a lot of things. I think mainly from parents wasn't wanting to give up their school, and I'm sure a town, because I know being on the board in the last 20 years here at Bar Eve, when consolidation has been pushed by the state, how people say if you lose your school, you'll lose your town. And 65, 66 year when we was juniors, why Alfordsville High School came up, and they kept a grade school yet. And I don't know how a lot of the other classes or other schools did, but our class that graduated in 67, and we took those Alfordsville students up there in 66, we become a very close-knit bunch. We never had any problems. I don't know if the parents did or not, But we stayed really close. In fact, we had a 50-year reunion this past summer, and we had like 90% of the survivors was at that 50-year reunion. So it was a tremendous reunion in Alfordsville. We're all just considered Bar Eve now, you know. But I'm sure, I'm not speaking from the Alfordsville end, when it hurt, I'm sure it hurt for them to lose their high school. But we blended together and it went very well.
Speaking of losing your city, your town, I wrote a paper when I was working on my superintendent's thesis, and it was about where I grew up and how it infected my leadership, how it affected my leadership skills. And I looked back at Plainville in the 1970s, and we had 23 businesses in Plainville, Indiana in 1970. It was a thriving community. It's a great place to grow up. And today there might be two. It's just, I can't.
Because the high school was the center of activity.
The hub of everything. The school's the hub of the entire community, especially in a small community. And I'll be honest with you, I go to the cemetery to see Mom and Dad, and then I just can't hardly go to town because it just doesn't look the same as it did.
Well, and I grew up in North Davis and went and graduated there. Steve Fisher was the first, his senior year, he was the first graduating class in North Davis. My graduating class was the first North Davis class to go all 12 years through that school system. And I can tell you, a long time after the 69 season, you can go to a ball game and still see the Odin people sitting in one section, the Elnora people sitting in one section, and the Plainville people sitting in one section. And it took a long time. It's still that way to a degree, but I would tell you, to Steve's point, once they consolidated the grade schools, it helped tremendously. And Brent Dalrymple's done a great job now with that program in bringing that community together. But for a long time, it was Elnora, Odin, and Plainville still. They didn't see each other until seventh grade. You know, it's a long way from Odin to Plainville. Not that long, but when you're young, it is.
I remember in the, when Epson shut down, that actually tore some families apart too, because we had the Ryan families. We had several of them came down and graduated with us at Bar Eve, and then they'd had siblings that graduated up there. So that was kind of split, figuring out which way they were going to go, but they fit in well there.
Yeah, I remember Mark graduated with us at North Davis. He came to Plainville, but Phil went to Bar Eve.
And Beth.
I always accuse you, talk about NCAA violations. I know that Slatton cheated at Elnora because he got all the athletes and we got all the smart kids. we didn't get any. I don't know what he was paying them, but he paid them some, probably more than $10, I'm guessing.
Bill wouldn't do that, would he?
I think I accused him of it.
Well, God rest his soul, Bill Slatton was the first coach of that 69 team, and Joe Todrank was the second coach. John Brigham was the first coach of the Bar Eve in 66, and then Joe Todrank came in 67. Consolidation really changed things, and we are where we are today. I can tell you another real quick story on consolidation. And Norman Beasley, I hope you don't mind me telling this. Norm says he was at a North Davis game in the 70s, and there was a lady sitting in front of him, and he thought she was keeping score. So he looked down at her and said, "Hey, how many points does number 32 have?" And this lady said, "Oh, no, I'm not keeping score. I'm counting how many players are out there are from Odin, how many are from Elnora, and how many are from Plainville." So it did hurt the small towns for a while, but it has came together now, and now you have Bar Eve and North Davies are both very strong school systems and very strong athletic programs. Sam?
Yeah, just another story on that. 68 was the first year for South Knox. And I was fortunate enough to be the first coach. And I was called in by the school board when we picked school colors, mascot, and all those. And they actually, it was brought up that we would have three players from Monroe City, three players from Wheatland, three from Decker, and three from Fitchton. And they thought that was the way to pick the team. And so there was some stuff going on behind the scenes.
Was that from the school board told you that?
It was a school board member.
Wow.
Huh, I can't believe that. Galen, you never did that on a Barre school board, did you?
I might just... Sam beat us. That Monroe City team was, I thought, one of the best high school teams I'd seen in Southern Indiana that you had in 67. It won the Wabash Valley. I thought they were pretty good, and they just thrashed us. But quick story about Plainville. We were almost called the Stumps. Stumps, really. We were almost called the Plainville Stumps. Now, wouldn't that scare you? It's a starting lineup tonight for the Plainville Stumps. Because they were building the canal right next to the railroad track, and they were cutting the trees off and leaving the stumps. And that was the true story. And I don't know, we were talking to, there's three young ladies here from Plainville back there with their midget shirts on. I asked them, I said, what would we be called today if we have to be politically correct? And they came up with the correct answer.
So now we'll move on. Something else that happened right in the middle of this consolidation was the opening of the new Hatchet House. That opened in 1967, and I was reading an article. The IHSAA commissioner at the time, Phil Eskew, was at that first game in the Hatchet House in 1967. It was a big deal, huge gym. Some trivia, the first basket scored in the new Hatchet House, Jeff Chambers. Scored the first basket ever in the new Hatchet House in 67. That leads us into the 66 sectional final. The Hatchets beat Lagodi 53-46. That was Gray's first year as head coach of the Hatchets. Then we had the Hatchet House. The first sectional in the Hatchet House was 67. That was won by the Washington Hatchets 75-54 over the Barre Vikings. Kenny Gray coached Hatchet team over Joe Todrank's Barre Viking team. And Galen, you, we're going to go into your session now. So as we talk about the opening of the Hatchet House, what was that like to play in the first sectional there?
Hearing these guys, John and Gary and Sam and these guys talk about the old Hatchet House and the atmosphere there, first I just wanted to mention, I thought also as being a young freshman or in grade school, going there, that was a hugest auditorium I'd ever seen. The atmosphere was unbelievable. And I know how the tickets, I believe Sam mentioned how what a tough ticket that was to get in if you won or lost. We even had a story of an old bus driver there that drove the Barre ball teams for years and years. He got outside and didn't have a ticket to get in, and the bunny bread man or whoever he was that was furnishing the buns and whatever was going in, and the bus driver picked up a tray of buns and followed him in, so he get into the game. But that was a wonderful place to play, and we did have the opportunity to be there as the first year from Barre in 66. And then in 67, going down there, when I went down there the first time, like those practices that Buddy mentioned, going down to the Hatchet House for a practice, we went into that new Hatchet House. I thought, man, this is... Louisville Auditorium, or it was Market Square Arena. It was humongous. And I remember that first year they'd done, and I don't know how many years he carried us on, but the ball teams sat underneath the basket on the ends compared to where they sit on the sidelines now. And that was a very memorable time on that sectional. We had a good basketball team. When Alfordsville came up, they brought an excellent player up in our class by the name of Frank Blake. And Frank could shoot the lights out, but he's like a lot of players. If he couldn't get his own shot, you would set two or three picks, but you'd get him open because he'd score if you got him open. And he was a great contributor, was right up in the top scorers in the county for a couple of years there, coming from Alfordsville. But that sectional game, and they talk about now that 67 sectional about being in shape or the players. The format they got now compared to what we had that then, we played the last game Friday night against St. John's, turned around, played the last game Saturday afternoon against the Lagodi team that was 19-1 or 20-1, Steve Brett and Kenny Fry being the guards, knocked them off and had to turn right around that night and play that 67 Hatchet team. Joe Todrank has mentioned many times, I wish I'd had one day to be able to prepare for that, but that team with with Scotty Alford and Larry Burr, Larry Fry, Billy Walton. Walton should have been allowed to play in that game. He was a football player playing basketball. I know me and John Nipp had five fouls, I think, in the first quarter trying to stay with him, and he was strong enough that he could bump us out of the way, and it looked like we'd done something. But that was an outstanding team, and we always said our claim to fame was that they went on to get put out by Bob Ford in Evansville North, who won the state that year. And excellent place in the – and excellent memories of that 67 team in the 67 sectional.
And that was Joe Todorek's first year at Bar Eve. And Joe is probably listening from Las Vegas, so I'm going to put the challenge out to Joe right now. Joe, next year you're going to be here. We want you here on our panel. Crowd, give it an applause for Joe Todorek.
Like to have him here. We was going through, Bar Eve had a few tough years, and we was going through a time we had in 4 years of being in high school. There was three high school coaches. John Brigman had our sophomore and junior year. Charlie Steiner was our B-team coach. And then Todorek came that senior year, and I'll never forget the game that he really wanted that year was against Sam. He had left a pretty good team over there at South Knox Monroe City, and he prepped us and drove us hard to try to beat them. And we stayed with them for a little bit, but that Steve-like Sutton team, they was, like Steve Fisher said, they were excellent, and they took us out. So we had humble pie on Bar Eve's floor that night.
And that 67 Bar Eve year, you know, I think that was the beginning of the Bar Eve winning tradition, was that 67 season. They made it to the upset Lagodi Lions in the Friday night game.
Saturday afternoon.
Or Saturday afternoon
game.
And then come back and play the Hatchets that night.
Delmer Doyle had actually, one of our main forwards, had twisted his ankle. Didn't tape it for the last game. Twisted his ankle just before halftime. I'm not making a big excuse because Washington was excellent. But we'd have been a little closer game with having him the second half.
Didn't Joe have a story about that 67 after you beat, was it Lagodi you beat?
And yes.
Then at dinner that evening, he ran into somebody. Was that right? He was saying something about running into some Washington fans at dinner.
I can't recall that.
Thanking you for beating Lagodi because then you were going to win. That gave them the sectional.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. He didn't appreciate that very much.
Yes. But, you know, the other thing you did that year, you were the Davis-Martin tourney champs in 66, on the 66-67 season. You beat Odin 81-60 in that championship of the Davis-Martin tourney. What was that tourney? Don't hear much about that.
That was a four-team tournament, a holiday tournament, and they'd kind of switched around on different teams, Davis and Martin County. We got to avenge a loss. Odin had beat us earlier in the year, had a good team that year in 67. Don Graber and Bobby Boardman and some of those guys, they had a pretty good team. And so we got to avenge a loss in that tournament and win that tournament was a highlight of that 67 year.
And you went on to serve on a Bar Eve school board for 32 years. You're a glutton for punishment to be on a school board that long. Any comments about serving on a school board that long at Bar Eve? You oversaw a lot of success in that school system through that tenure. Comments?
Yes, it was a very rewarding time. There was some tough times, but most of it was very rewarding. At one time, we had the state record of have the 20-year, the longest-standing school board continuous for 20 years. That didn't change any members, and that's kind of unheard of this time. And of the things I'm most happy to see is academically, Bar Eve's been in the top five in the state in the last 10, 15 years, and the athletics have come along right with it.
You know, the other thing I've noticed in looking back over the history of Bar Eve also is you realize that there's three former coaches of the Bar Eve Vikings that are in the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. Joe Todorank, Dave Ulmer. Well, there's two. But I tell you, Brian Hughes will be in the Hall of Fame. So there are three.
Well, Cabby O'Neill.
Okay, four. There's another one. That's right.
Cabby O'Neill was with Montgomery early.
So, you know, that's a pretty big deal.
That is. And we had, I wanted to just mention, because I knew his daughter and son-in-law is here, but Mr. Craney, Coach Craney, was a big part of Montgomery's success as coach and then a superintendent before he moved down to coach these fine teams here at Washington.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we move on to the 68 sectional, and that was won by the Washington Hatchets 57 to 36 over Lagodi St. John's Eagles. That was a Kenny Gray coach team in 68, another sectional title. So consecutive sectionals, actually three in a row, 4 in a row, 65, 66, 67, and 68. So Washington won 4 in a row in 68. That 67 Washington team went on, by the way, to the Sweet 16. It was probably the it was the first time they had been to the Sweet 16 since in 15 years, I believe. So then we have the 69 sectional to end the decade, the Otwell Millers 80, the North Davies Cougars 77, and that we bring in Steve Fisher. Steve, again, played for Plainville, started 3 years there, then the school consolidated, and his senior year was the first year at North Davis. You know, there were five co-favorites in that 69 sectional, and by the way, Washington was not one of the five co-favorites for once. Washington Catholic, Otwell, Lagodi, Lagodi St. John's, and North Davies were actually the five co-favorites. They all had over 500 records. Steve, tell us about that 69 year.
Well, I'm a little prejudiced, but I don't think there's probably been a sectional, and no offense, gentlemen, that had as much talent top to bottom that the 69 sectional did. You had Washington Catholic, who was really good, and you had Otwell, who was really good. St. John's was undefeated. We were 16-4, and I'm prejudiced, but we were pretty good. And Lagodi was young. Canada was a freshman, I believe, or sophomore, freshman. And it was the year before they went to the state Final Four. But it was just one of those things, and I agree with what Galen said a while ago. We played St. John's in the second afternoon game, beat them 83-80, and they were undefeated. And we had to turn around, and Foster got undercut at halftime. He had 19 the first half, and he didn't play the second half. Barnett went out with cramps. We were really not very deep, 6, maybe 7. I thought Roman Weigler came in and played as great a game as he could play to help us out. And we just got beat. We had an 8-point lead with 3 minutes to go, and, you know, we just got beat. Louisville got beat down, up 4 with 0.9 seconds the other night, so I guess I'm not too ashamed that we got beat, but there's probably not been too many days go by that you don't think about those things. I remember in the Washington Catholic game, they had us beat. And we were down one. We'd clawed our way back into the game, and we were down one. This was on Thursday night, I believe, or Wednesday night. And we needed the ball, and I didn't know what to do, so I just went out and shoved Frankie Wilson down. He was holding the ball. I just shoved him. The referee must have been looking at the blonde in the second row because they didn't call anything. So Birch grabbed the ball, went down, banked about a 5-footer in, and we went up one, and Washington Catholic missed, and I got the rebound, hit a couple free throws to ice it at the buzzer. But I'm sure the Otwell people wouldn't agree with this, but if we played them on a Friday, Saturday like we do now, I think it would have been a different sectional champion that year. But I also want to say one thing. Doug, I don't know who all volunteers are here, but if there's people who have not been to this museum that live in Davis County and the surrounding areas, you're missing the boat. You need to get out and get here. I'm so honored that my dad's World War II uniform's on display upstairs. I'm so glad my mom had the foresight to donate that to the museum. This place is unbelievable.
Steve, thanks for those comments. Coming from Plainville, let's back up a little bit because we went through the 10 years of the sectional scores, but you're here to represent all the North Davies community. So Elnora, Plainville,
Odin. Tell us some things about some other names from those schools through the 60s and maybe some other Plainville players and you want to bring attention to.
We were I'm still scarred. My life will always be scarred. I'm hoping today we'll be able to release a little of that because John has promised to take me to Bob's for a steak after we're done. But my life was scarred in 1964 when Plainville had Washington beat, and they put on the famous "the referees can't call all the fouls" press on the fourth quarter, and John hit two free throws with 2 seconds to go and beat us by one. And I was 13 years old, and I think I cried for a week. And the other scar that I have is from Buddy Graham, because my dad promised me that we would go to the state finals if they won the 59 game. And if you don't know the history on the 59 Simmons State game, you need to read it. But we had some good teams at Plainville. John Devine wore John out. He told me that earlier. Don Smith was on that team, and Gary Brown, Paul Hayes. And they were pretty good. And Jerry Osmond was the coach, and we just didn't have the going down the stretch. We just didn't have the one guy just to take over like John did. Him and Alan Hopewell, I remember those two guys specifically. Odin. Don't remember a whole lot about Odin. I remember watching them in 68 and 68. Odin and Eleanor were both loaded, and they went to the Sweet City Sectional. Odin got beat in the final game. Jerry was coaching there. Billy was coaching at Eleanor, and Art was coaching at Plainville. And then we all came together the next year, and there were four guys from Eleanor, one guy from Odin, one guy from Plainville. It kind of took the six spots. And then Bill did a really good job of molding those last five or six positions and kind of doing something similar to what Sam said. He kind of made sure everybody was represented. And we had a really good team. And Plainville midgets were just, that was, you know, that's where I grew up. You grew up hating hatchets. And I told Gary earlier, and it's quite an honor for me. I knew everybody else on the committee, but I got to meet Gary today finally. And we may never have beaten them, but I can tell you that they never won a game in my backyard. And I always scored 40 or more. You know, you grew up, as everybody said, you know, hating. You hated the Hatchets because they were the king. Just like when Ligoti got to be the king in the 70s, everybody hated Ligoti. And I was fortunate enough to coach 5 years in Ligoti and with Jack. And on the 75, I was one of the assistants, freshman coach. And, you know, I'm 23 years old, and I think, good grief, this is easy. And I found out 5 years later it wasn't so easy, so I started blowing the whistle.
Tell us about the officiating career. You went into a long officiating career, and in a couple of weeks you're going to be given the Center Circle Officials Award, the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame. I think let's give him a round of applause for that, buddy.
Thank you.
How many state finals and semi-states did you referee boys basketball?
I did three state finals and six semi-states. And a little story there is I started refereeing in 1979-80, and Norm Beasley was kind enough to give me 48 games at Shoals that year. I worked 9 out of 10 JV games. I think he thought I was going to homer everybody because I played for him at Plainville. He really got me started. And the next year, I applied for a sectional in 81, and I had 6 varsity games, is what you had to have, but we had a flu epidemic that year. And schools were canceled, games were canceled, and I ended up working 19 varsity games and received a sectional. In 83, I worked my first regional, and that was in my fourth year of officiating. In my 1986, in my seventh year of officiating, I got a call and they said, can you handle the Newcastle-Shelbyville game in the Simmons State? And I said, well, yeah, I can handle it, but I've known Sam for a long time, and assistant coach Shelbyville's fraternity brother, and we live right next door to one another.
For the crowd, Sam Alford was coaching that Newcastle team. So,
yeah, I believe he was. And so we had the game. We had a great game. If you've never been to Hinkle Fieldhouse on Saturday afternoon when the sun's shining through the lights, and all I could think about was going down the tunnel and all the great, great players that had walked up and down that ramp. I mean, going down to the dressing rooms. Unbelievable. We had a great game. I felt like we did. Game's over. Sam comes up to me at halftime, and he was a Lamb of Chi at Franklin. I was an SAE, and he said, I knew I should have been an SAE. And game's over. Sam was defeated. And I teched one of his players real late in the game, and he was kind of acting silly. And Sam came in the dressing room after the game. I can still picture opening the door and Sam standing with a towel over his shoulder, which was his trademark, and saying, Steve, you guys, you and Larry really did a nice job. You called a great game. And that probably meant more to me in my officiating career than he'll ever know. And the other part of that story is I ran into this young man at Newcastle when I became superintendent there a few years ago, and he came into my office and apologized, Sam, for kind of acting silly that day. And we've become good friends since then. So I was fortunate. The next year I was called and was had an opportunity to work the state finals. And when you get there, they take the six of you at that time in, and they say, okay, game one, Gary and Galen, game two is Steve, or Steve Brothers and John Helm. And I'm sitting there going, geez, I'm going to work the final game. And I was fortunate enough, I had Bill Green and George Griffith from Marion and Richmond. And Bill had two kids by the name of Edwards and Jones. And they outscored Richmond by themselves. So I had, and that was in my eighth year of officiating. So I've been very fortunate. I've worked two more since then.
That's great, Steve Fisher. And now we're going to turn it back over to Dave Crooks.
Thanks, Doug. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, Steve Brothers remembers. We'll also talk basketball then and now. We'll dive into class basketball, and there'll be some final questions from the panel for each other. It's coming up on the Roundtable Memories discussion from the 1960s. We're live at the Davies County Museum in downtown Washington on WAMW-FM Washington and worldwide at WAMW-AMFM.com. Back after these messages.
Hi, I'm John Newton at the Donaldson Insurance Agency in Washington, your auto owner's insurance agent. In this moment, who has your back? Do you know the name of your insurance agent? Does your agent know your name? Or would you call a 1-800 number that connects you with another state, another country? Get a local independent insurance agent with Auto Owners Insurance and the Donaldson Insurance Agency in Washington. Call for a free quote today at 812-254-4668.
Helena in Montgomery is growing and proud to invest in Montgomery and Davies County. Coming in March, the newest state-of-the-art dry blending facility in the region will be opening across from the county garage on County Road 100 North, west of Montgomery. This facility is nestled on 10 acres and will include a new anhydrous ammonia plant right in time for spring planting. This is phase one of a multi-phase growing plan for Helena in Montgomery. Helena, investing in the future here at home in Davies County.
This is Tim with the Norse Group. Thinking about selling your home and wondering what it's worth? Requesting a free comparative market analysis from the Norse Group is the first step. This knowledge, along with the guidance of a highly qualified FC Tucker MB Realtor, will equip you with everything you need to decide if the right time to sell is now. So what are you waiting for? Talk to the Norse Group at 812-254-7939 or stop by our office at 412 East Flora Street in Washington. F.C. Tucker, an Indiana company for the past 100 years, serving its neighbors with good old Hoosier values.
The Knights of Columbus invite you to join them each Friday night for their awesome fish special during Lent. The KFC will offer a delicious fish buffet every Friday night from 5 to 8 p.m. and a Lenten lunch special too. Don't forget great juicy steaks Friday and Saturday night and steak specials for dinner every Saturday. Prime rib is offered the first Saturday of each month. And save the date for the return of the big treasure hunt. Saturday, April 21st, the jackpot starts at over $765,000 with 21 numbers left. The Knights of Columbus, always open to the public for lunch and dinner in downtown Washington.
We're back at the Daviess County Museum in downtown Washington on Memories 107.9 WAMW-FM and worldwide at WAMWAMFM.com. We want to let you know that we are recording today's program, and as early as Monday afternoon, if you go to WAMWAMFM.com, there'll be a link where you can listen on demand, or if you want to save it for a download, you can have it forever. So that's how that'll work, WAMWAMFM.com. A big thanks to our sponsors today, Helena in Montgomery, The Legends in Washington, Donaldson Insurance, American Legion Post 121, the Knights of Columbus, Alan Bubalo at Edward Jones, and F.C. Tucker, M.G. Realtors, the Norris Group. It's our final segment. We've got so much to cover, and to bring you our final portion of today's program, here's our referee, Doug Doherty.
Thanks, Dave. And before we get into the Washington Catholic and Steve Brothers session, I got two quick things I want to bring up. If any of you have never been to the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame in Newcastle, Indiana, you should go. Obviously, you're interested. If you're listening to this and hearing this, you're interested in high school basketball. So if you haven't been to that facility, it's a great, great place to go. Second thing I want to bring up before we turn it over to Steve is back to Mr. Fisher. I have a quick question for you. Officiating, in all of your officiating career, were there any, who was the hardest local coach? Who complained the most? Are there certain coaches that you just really, and I know that's a loaded question, but, and maybe you really don't want to air it publicly?
Oh, I really didn't have any trouble with anybody but one, and he was coach of the Floyd Central Highlanders by the name of Joe Hinton. I don't think there's probably a game went by that I didn't tech him. I didn't have him the night that he got six technicals, but I did not have that game. But Joe and I just had personality conflict, and I really didn't have any problems. But I'll give you an example. I had a game at Bar Eve one night with Forest Park, and you can imagine what it was like. Early 90s, and at the end of the third quarter, I had a block charge call, and I'll be doggone if the kid in Forest Park not only ran over the Bar Eve kid, but he threw it up and went in. The horn went off, and I thought, well, I called, blew the whistle. But I thought, well, I don't even know what to call. So I go out to my partner and I said, "Do me a favor and tell me that the horn went off before he let go of that ball." He said, "What?" I said, "Just tell me that." He said, "Okay, it did." So I went to the bench and I said, "Nothing. We got nothing." And of course, Forest Park's going crazy. So I go to the Forest Park coach and I said, "Denny, here's the deal. I had a charge, and if that's going to be no bucket, and you're going to get a foul assessed to your player." He said, "You sure?" I said, "Yep." So I went over to Brian's jumping up and down. I went over to Brian. And I said, "Brian, I had a block. And I'm going to tell you, it was going to cost you 3 points." He said, "Okay." He said, no problem. So you try to buy yourself out of situations with things like that. And I don't know if the horn went off or not, but they didn't either. So know that around here, everybody had a lot of respect, I think, for us. Joe Todrank, if you're listening, Joe, remember the day in your office that you told me I'd never make it? He said, "Steve, you and Gary will never make it." And I often remind him of that. But it's been a good career, and I can't be fortunate enough. It's just wonderful.
Galen Graber?
I just wanted to echo one thing about Fish. I never did always agree with his calls. But if he made a call, it was decisive. He never, maybe this, maybe that, go confer with somebody. He shot it straight up. And he was right at least 50% of the time.
Well, I notice he does have a pair of glasses around his neck, too, so I don't know if that has anything to do with officiating.
My grandchildren told me not to wear these today.
Steve Brothers, you really attended every WC game in the 1960s, home and away?
No, just home games. I'll get into that in a minute. I have a Steve Fisher story I'd like to share, if you don't mind. This was in the mid-'80s. And the Washington Hatchets were pretty bad. I was the official scorer in those days, and I worked with Rick Wiry, who was the timer. Well, we were playing a Boonville team, and they were really good, and at halftime we were behind 45-7. So we're getting ready for the second half, and as Galen said, Steve was, by the way, Steve was an excellent official, but he was very decisive in his calls and, you know, pretty extroverted, I might, you know, put it politely, like you were in charge. So you were about ready to inbound the ball and looked up the scoreboard and blew the whistle, waved your arms, you know, hold it, hold it. You came over to the scorer's bench and said, we play 8 minutes here. And Wiry and myself go, what? What are you talking about? We play 8 minutes in this game. You've got 7 minutes and 45 seconds up on the scoreboard. We play 8 minutes. And Wiry goes, that's the score.
You're leaving the most important part out. That was the year of the sit-down rule, and Stan was trying to make a point because Cato was in the stands. Commissioner Cato was in the stands that night, and I'd already teched him twice in the first half, and I swore I'd never come back to Washington after that.
And I do have a story about Brayton Simmons. This was told to me by the late, great Tom Miles. They played on the same softball team together. And both, as you mentioned, Tommy was like a great athlete. So Tony Purdy, who's an African-American man, and was on second base, and Tom Miles was on first base, and Brayton was up at the plate. And he hit one out of sight, of course, and there was no fence, so they had to run out the home runs. By the time they got around to home plate, Tommy had caught up with Tony Purdy, and then Brayton, who was really fast, had caught up with Tommy, so it was boom, boom, boom across home plate, and Brayton said to Tom, we look like an Oreo cookie coming across home plate there. So, but I did attend every WC home game in the 60s because my father was the custodian at Washington Catholic for about 25 years. So he had the keys. So he would sneak my sister Beth and I into the back door. We had to go through the boys' locker room, so we had to get there early because my sister was with me. So we would always be the first ones there. So I went from first grade on. So my first season was 1959 to 1960. So I did see every game in the Birdcage for that decade. And, you know, we talked about the old Hatchet House rocking. Well, in its time, the Birdcage could rock too because it was so small. And, you know, in the mid-60s, WC actually had an enrollment of over 300 students, which people find that hard to believe now. But it was, a pretty strong, they had some strong teams in the 60s. So it was a lot of fun. The cheer blocks were really good. You know, the Bishop wouldn't allow girl cheerleaders until about, I think, 1967. So we had male cheerleaders, which was a lot of fun. Those guys really got into it. And then by the time the girls came in 67, man, we thought we were in heaven then, you know, girl cheerleaders. So it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of good players in the 60s. In the early 60s, we had, I don't know whether any of you guys remember any of these names, Terry Hooton and Fred Strickland. Carl Grannon was, he was about 6'3 or so, but he seemed like a giant back then, being 6'3.
Right.
And, he was a nice player. I talked to Morris Petty, who graduated in 62 last week, and he had a couple of funny little tidbits. His coach was Ron Allstott when he was a senior, and the coach didn't want the players to have girlfriends. They weren't allowed to have girlfriends. So Morris was dating his future wife, Karen Klim, and he was going to have to break up with her. So to ease the pain, he was going to go to the movies, take her to the movies, and then break up with her after the movie. So he went and sat in the theater, and a couple came and sat behind him. It was Mr. and Mrs. Ron Allstott, the coach. So that was a bad deal for Morris. Also, he said they were going to play the Hatchets, And, you know, you always lost to the Hatchets, except one year in 64, John. I think the Cardinals beat the Hatchets. You remember that game? Yes. What happened?
Was that Vic Hopkins?
That was John Dayton, Mike Allison, Daryl Cox, Jim Hooten, okay. Don Innes, that group.
Quite honestly, I forgot all about that.
I thought you would. I thought you would.
No, one of our biggest fears, and I assume that you will allude to this perhaps in a little bit with the opportunities, but locally, when you were involved in girls' basketball, probably one of the toughest teams you ever had to play in the entire state was the Bar Reef Vikings. And equally, when we had to play teams such as the Washington Catholic, they had good players, don't get me wrong, but the pressure was on because you were expected to win, and the embarrassment factor of losing was huge, and I think it affected everybody's game. But once again, you're right. We lost that regular season game to a pretty good group of kids.
Yeah, Daryl Cox especially was a really good player. Vic was a good player the year before in 63. Vic Hopkins was a good player for the Cardinals. But Morris said his coach's strategy when he was going to play the Hatchets, because back then there was a jump ball at the beginning of each quarter, plus when you fouled someone early, you shot one free throw and got a bonus, I think, after five. So his strategy was going to, you know, they're going to get the tip, foul them immediately, they'll hit a free throw, we'll hold the ball for the whole quarter, then shoot, and then that way we'll win 8-4. Well, they lost 47-27, so it didn't really work out. Another big low light for the WC teams in the 60s was probably the most controversial sectional game of the decade, and that was 1966, when the Hatchets had Jack Traylor, Alan Hopewell, Scott Alford, Larry Fry, the football player Bill Walton. You know, well, Bill was a good basketball player too, and they were, I think they were 19-1 or something like that, and WC had they were 8-13. And they had good players, including Mike Wichman, Gary Guy, General Tony Jones, and Mike Lee and Tom Miles. But they were 8-13. And this was the second to the last sectional game ever played in the old Hatchet House, Saturday afternoon. And WC got out to a lead. And actually, they were ahead by maybe 10 points at halftime. And it was kind of interesting because you go get your Coke and the popcorn, and everybody's going, well, isn't it nice that WC was able to make such a good showing here? Sooner or later, the Hatchets are going to catch up and beat them, you know. But isn't it nice? That was the general feeling. Well, eventually, the Hatchets did finally catch up in the waning seconds. And actually, I think they hit a couple of free throws to take a two-point lead, their first lead of the game. With about 10 seconds to go. Washington Catholic took the ball out and were headed toward the west basket and got the ball to Gary Guy about at the right elbow, and he nailed a jumper at the buzzer. Well, the old Hatchet House was so loud that they had a starter's pistol that they were supposed to shoot when the horn went off so the referees could hear the buzzer. Well, Gary's shot clearly beat the starter's pistol. Clearly. Yeah. Okay. Bill Walton is contesting that. But let me finish the story, okay? So the basket was disallowed. Okay, so the Hatchets win by 2. I really think that's when, there's been animosity through the between the two schools for decades. They're okay now, but for decades, there was some hatred there. And I think it all stemmed from this one game. Now, later, I'm a teacher. I need to finish the story, Bill. I need to finish. So I become a teacher at Washington High School, and one of my colleagues, Roy Walker, was this was his first year. 1966 was his first year of teaching at Washington, and he was a worker at the game, and he was near the scorer's table. His story is, and I suppose I should believe him. His story is the horn went off. The starter's pistol misfired, okay, and the second shot of the pistol was after the buzzer, and the basket actually did not count. Well, okay, I believe Roy, but at the time, the shot we felt clearly beat the gun. I talked to Gary Guy years later about that, and he said, I asked him about the shot. He said, well, when I get up to the pearly gates, that's the first question I'm asking. So that was, I think, the most controversial game of the decade. In the late 60s, the Cardinals had some really good squads, too. They had Chuck Wichman, who played for Syracuse, got a full ride to Syracuse, played for 4 years. His freshman coach, by the way, at Syracuse, because back then freshmen couldn't play in college, on the college team. His freshman coach was Jim Boeheim, back when Boeheim was a freshman coach. So he played 3 years at Syracuse. He was just an outstanding high school basketball player. Unfortunately, he got a severe ankle sprain his senior year and only – he had to sit out 6 or 7 games. Otherwise, this team's record would have been a lot better. I think they were probably one of the better teams in the decade. And they participated in the 69 sectional where everybody was good. And, if you talk to people around town that were alive back then, most people feel like that 69 sectional was probably the best one ever because the teams were all good and they were evenly matched. And unfortunately, Fisher's North Davis team squeaked by the WC Cardinals there in the waning moments. But
2 points.
Right? Yeah, 2 points. I think we missed a free throw, and you came down. And was it you that hit the free throws? Thanks a lot, man. But Tom Miles was graduated in 68, one of the top 5 athletes ever to come out of this town, no doubt about it, Tremendous.
A couple other Wichmans.
Yeah, Mike Wichman, 67. He was a great player, too. He and Gary Guy. Gary Guy was 6'7", which back then was a giant.
Yeah.
And so Mike and Gary Guy made a nice tandem for that 67 team. And then the 69 group was really good. Chuck Wichman, Mike Arnold, Terry Alberry, Mike Edmiston, Malcolm Arnold.
You went on after graduation. You got into coaching, girls coaching, and boys coaching at first, I think, I believe, and then head coach of the Hatchets for the Lady Hatchets from 93 to 05. And you had a Final Four trip in 1995 with the Lady Hatchets, single-class system. What does that mean to you? That's got to be one of the biggest accomplishments of your life. And tell us about that.
John helped me on that. John was with me for 3 years. I coached for 14. And I think John will agree that was a really exciting time for girls basketball in this area. We had a run of tremendous female athletes come through the school. And as Sam said, you're really only as good as your players. And we just were loaded. And so it was a lot of fun. I think if we're honest about it, John, all we did was kind of roll out the basketballs and let them do the work because they were so good, offensively especially, with Julie, John's daughter, and we had a couple of twins, Amy and Angie Hughes, who were good, Robin Houchins, and then the current Lady Hatchets coach, Gretchen Miles, was a tremendous point guard. So we were loaded,
yeah.
And we ended up, we went to five straight single-class semi-states. Three with the group I just mentioned. And it was a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, coaching up at the state finals, first of all, the lights are brighter. And the games seemed like it lasted about 10 minutes. and it was over. You know, it just goes by so quickly. So it was a lot of fun.
You know, we've got about 20 minutes left, and I want to give this group time to ask each other some questions. It's probably not enough time, but that's what we've got. So I'd like to move in now to let the panelists ask each other some questions. Anybody have anything? Buddy Graham?
I want to ask Gary Grider, how in the world did Ireland beat you guys when their tallest player was 5'9" or 5'10"? How did that happen?
Buddy, I'm still trying to figure that out. I don't have a clue. It was a weird game. It was a weird game, and just came out, unfortunately, not for our team. So. But I don't know. I don't know. Buddy, I want to ask you, how'd you end up at Texas Wesleyan?
Well, Elmer Hannibut was the coach. He's from Huntingburg, Indiana. And he would call me every Sunday morning and wake me up. So I knew who Elmer Hannibut was. And I was going to go to Indiana State. I'd signed a scholarship to go to Indiana State. In the meantime, I got married and right before school started. And I thought, you know, maybe we need to get out of town. Let's go down to Texas. So that's exactly what I did. We went down to Texas and loved every minute of it.
Sam Albert.
Norm, are you out there?
Yeah.
Did you drive?
I think
did you drive? Did you drive Larry today?
Well, somebody had to.
He outran Brayton again today, I think. Make sure he takes his medicine on the way home.
Hey, Doug, I'd just like to say, you asked me about great players at Plainville and things. I saw Jim Kane here earlier, and Jim played at, he was a senior when I was a freshman, but he's got to be in the top five leading scorers in the history of Plainville basketball. Of course, Weasel Bateman was the greatest and the first player ever scored 2,000 points in the state of Indiana, I believe.
Yeah.
And but Jim was a great player. I had the opportunity to play with him our senior year. We weren't very good, but we did beat Barre that year.
Anybody else have any questions? John Hill.
No, I don't have any questions. I have a couple of comments, and one of them is the fact that I was fortunate enough to play with two great shooters and two great scorers, one of them being Gary Grider, the other being, of course, Jerry Flake. But it's an observation or comment I'd like to make, and maybe have somebody else offer a differing opinion. But I was asked by somebody who was the best shooter I had ever seen in high school. And I recognize I played with a couple of really good ones, but I think perhaps the best shooter, pure shooter that I ever saw was Dave Shellhouse from Evansville North. I don't know if Grider or anybody else would differ from that or have a different person that they might equally name as the best shooter.
Anybody have any comments? Well, I've heard a lot about Jerry Flake's shooting, that's for sure.
I have one more comment. It's a fragmented comment. It's a compliment, actually, to Buddy and the Odin team. I think everybody knew exactly where they were when JFK was assassinated and shot. It was a defining moment in history. And only perhaps for me and maybe the people from Odin, but I remember exactly where I was at and exactly what I was doing when Odin won the sectional, and they come pouring out of the gym and honking horns and going screaming nuts. And I was probably about 12 years old, but I remember exactly what I was doing and where I was at. That's the significance of Indiana basketball, particularly during the single-class system.
And let's touch on that real quickly, and you're all welcome to answer it, but specifically Sam Alford and Buddy Graham. Single-class system versus the class system. And I know it's a political hot potato, but, Buddy, you played in Indiana. Then you spent a lot of your career in Illinois, and I think it was always class ball during your career in Illinois high school. Sam, you coached both single class and multi-class. Oh, you didn't? Well, give me some thoughts. Sam, you start.
Well, I'm the old school. I like the single class. But we'll never go back to it, so there's no reason to argue, so you might as well enjoy what you have now. But there was nothing like the single class basketball.
Buddy, you've experienced both.
Yeah, I, of course, disagree. Let me say also, just to jump back, but I've never seen anything like it. When we beat the Hatchets and our fans just came across that court, I didn't know what was going on. It was unbelievable. And, of course, that's one thing I'll never forget. And back to the class system, but I think two classes is what it should be. And we had the two-class system in Illinois for quite a while, and that seemed to work out well. And, at first I was against the class system being from Indiana, but being able to win a couple of state championships with the smaller class, I kind of like that. I like two classes.
Interesting. Galen?
I'd just like to speak to that a little bit on the class system. I understand I really like the class system also, but the one class system, what I think really got people burnt out on it was your Lafayette, Jeffs, and Vincennes. They win 35 sectionals in a row, and there's no question there's no use to even have a sectional, in those situations. That was probably the push for some of that. Here in Washington, I don't think it would have changed a whole lot. I think we'd have had four or five teams, Ligoti, Bar Eve, Washington Catholic, going to win the sectional anyway, and they would move it around. For our area, I don't think it makes that much difference, but I've seen why Lafayette and them done that. And plus, it does give, seeing Bar Eve being to the state a lot of times in Class A now, it does give more kids probably an advantage to get a state championship.
An interesting item I was going through, 1954 IHSA tournament. If you were to, and the reason I bring up 54, that was the year of the Milan Miracle, the movie Hoosiers was made. If there was class basketball in 1954, I found the information that would tell you where each Daviess County school would be in that class system in 54. Understand, they did it by, if there were 800 schools, and there were four classes, then you put the top 200 in the top class and vice versa. But in 1954, Epsom and Alfordsville would have been single A. Plainville and Elnora would have been 2A. Washington Catholic, Odin, and Montgomery would have been 3A in 1954, and Washington would have been 4A. And by the way, Milan would have been 3A in 1954. Interesting to go back and look at.
The thing I don't like about it is a couple things. One, I don't, being a school superintendent, keeping these kids on the bus and driving 75 miles one way during the week, especially now with the great foresight that we had I-STEP this week, which just ridiculous. But I just don't want kids on the bus. And the second thing is there's a gymnasium right up the street here that's sitting empty all week. And my understanding is it's going to sit empty next week. And to me, that's ridiculous. Totally ridiculous.
I agree. And I got one last question before we end this ceremony. And I'm going to put you all on the spot as I did the guys last year. I want each of you to tell us who was the best Daviess County high school basketball player in the 60s that you saw or played with, and the best team, best Daviess County high school basketball team in the 60s. And by the way, you can't name yourself as the best player in the 60s. And I'll start with Steve Brothers over there, of course.
No pressure here.
No pressure, Steve.
I would say it would be a tie. Because the two played together, and be John and Jerry. I think they were the best. Didn't you both average about the same amount of points per game? John Helm and Jerry Flake. Because their team was, they played on great teams, and they were both outstanding players. They each had their own special talents. John was more of a banger on the inside, and as John mentioned, Jerry was such a great outside shooter and had such a great touch. They were just a lot of fun to watch, and I think their team senior year was probably the best team, the 65 Hatchets, from what I saw. I didn't see too many of the younger or earlier in the decade, but that was the best team I saw.
Are you saying in the sectional or in the county? In the sectional, down here, I thought the best player I probably ever seen play was Junior G. As far as the team, unfortunately, I don't remember seeing Gary's team play, but I would agree with John and Jerry Flake's team of 65.
I tell you, there were so many of them there, but I would have to go with Junior G. I thought he was the best player during that time. Yeah.
And team?
Yeah. Best team, I thought, was our junior year, the Washington Hatchets junior year. I thought we had the best balanced team. We had tall boys. We had, you know, guards. And I would say that would be.
Be the 62 year?
Yeah, 62, 63.
Buddy Graham?
Well, I've only got 1 year in the 60s, but if Sam got 22, I have to double-check that. If he got 22 against us, that's pretty good. But, well, my teammate Buddy Meek was pretty good, too. So those are the two people I think about.
Sam Alford, I know you were around this area most of the 60s. So.
Well, the team I think for me is easy, and that would be John's 65 team. Players, you know, players are a funny thing when you go to comparing them, like what's a most valuable player and things like that. John and Jerry definitely would stand out, and G, you have to put G and Gary in there from what they did after they graduated to go and be a starter on the University of Houston with their great team and to start at Miami of Florida with Rick Barry and that great team. You know, we're blessed. As I said earlier, there were a lot of good players in the 60s. And Washington's, Davis County is very blessed to have them.
Steve Fisher?
I'll go with Junior, but I'm going to throw a name out that I think he was a great player, and that's Bill Drake. Played Lagodi in 1964 whenever Shoals had beaten them twice during the regular season, and they beat Shoals in the afternoon game, and then got beat that night by Washington. But I thought, or maybe they, 64, Lagodi did win it. But Bill Drake was phenomenal, phenomenal player. And I think Jack would tell you that, too. He played with Junior, of course, earlier in Junior's career. Junior was great, too. But the best player I remember in the county was Sam's brother, Scott. I really thought Scott was a great player. He was a senior. I was a sophomore, and I really idolized him. And I thought he was a great player. Best team, I don't think there's any question. 69 Cougars.
John Helm.
Well, I thought the best teams probably was Gary Greider's 64 team, or when he was a junior. It was extremely well balanced with some really big players. I thought it was extremely well coached, fundamentally sound, and I equally thought that our team, which of course was ranked so high, had a good balance also, as did the 63 Lagodi team that you guys are alluding to with Junior G and Bill Drake and so forth. But I think the catalyst behind that Lagodi team was obviously Junior and his passing ability, and not so much his scoring ability. So I think the two greatest players that I saw play or played with was probably Gary Greider and Jerry Flake.
Two good ones. And with that, one last comment I've got. This is sectional final night, and unfortunately, there's only one Davies County school
still remaining, and that is the Bari Vikings, and we do wish them the best of luck tonight. And with that, Dave Crooks, we're going to turn it back over to you. Appreciate everything you've done for the museum and for hosting this, helping host this event.
My pleasure, everybody. Before we wrap it up, speaking of Bar Reeve, they'll play at 7:05 tonight. If you can't get to the game, at 7:30 tip-off, 7:05 broadcast on our sister station, The General, at 95.9 FM. Again, this program will be uploaded by Monday afternoon at WAMWAMFM.com. You can download the program or listen to it at your leisure. I want to thank our sponsors, Helena in Montgomery, the Legends in Washington, Donaldson Insurance, the American Legion Post 121, the Knights of Columbus, Alan Bubalo at Edward Jones, and F.C. Tucker, M.G. Realtors, Norris Group. On behalf of Andy Morrison, our operations manager, and Dwayne and Cannon Shake back at the studio, I'm Dave Crooks. Thanks for listening, and thanks to the Daviess County Museum. One last hand for our roundtable today. A great and unique program here at the Daviess County Museum. Have yourself a very safe Saturday afternoon. Thanks for listening. We now return to the studio.